Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for the Ogletree Deacons Podcast. My name is Kevin Bland. I'm an Orange County shareholder specializing in workplace safety for nearly 20 years. I guess over 20 years now, if you count my time in industry, almost 40 years, but practicing attorney, 20 years. I'm here with Karen Tynan, who's the chair of our West Coast OSHA practice group. She's located here in Sacramento, California. The podcast is part two in a series of conversations about Cal OSHA appeal and understanding that process and understanding defenses. This series is perfect for general counsel, human resource managers, risk managers, safety professionals within the company to have a deeper understanding of the defenses available and the burdens of proof we have in using these defenses to defeat citations in Cal OSHA appeals. So, Karen,
so
you ready?
Right. Yeah, here we go. We're into number two here, and I think we're on a roll. These are good.
All right. Next, what I want to kind of dive into a little bit is jurisdiction, because at the end of the day, if they don't have jurisdiction, they can't issue citations. If they do, they can. And so that's really the very first thing you're thinking of, right?
Well, especially if a client is doing work on, if they call and they've been doing work on a federal piece of property, right? Federal project or a military base, not uncommon, right? So jurisdiction, Fed OSHA actually does have some jurisdiction in California. And I know you've had an Indian reservation case where Cal OSHA could not issue citations, right?
Right. Yeah.
And I recently had a levee case on the water with construction company, but it's a waterway. It's a federal levee. So Cal OSHA can't come in and do an inspection and issue citations. So it's a foundational question that Kevin and I ask when we're taking a look at citations, especially for really big contractors that might be doing a piece of work that falls into one of these exceptions. Of course, maritime employment is one of the big exceptions. But in California, just remember that it is a defense that we would assert, the defense being lack of jurisdiction, if it's appropriate, and it is one of those in our giant list that's always in our packet. It's part of what we've developed over the years. It's much more than you check the boxes either on the paper forms or OASIS, and it certainly reflects our depth of knowledge and our expertise.
No, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I think last count we were up at about 25 additional affirmative defenses we've developed over the years through case law and things. So that's very important. I'm glad you mentioned that. Besides jurisdiction, then this is probably one of the most talked about topics and issues that come up in dealing with citations that are issued, and that's classification. Now, can you kind of walk through for me what classifications are and the different classifications and how that interplay works and appeals?
Let's talk about that, Kevin, because it ends up being something that's important to clients, because having a serious citation on their record has such tremendous negative impact, right? Whether it's insurance premiums, their ability to contract with other vendors or with the government or big construction projects, right? So the classification of a citation can be important also in your indemnification agreements with other contractors on a site. So Kevin and I, we've talked about in other podcasts, the failure to report a violation of Section 342. Now that's, we're going to see that as a regulatory citation, right?
Right.
And I see other regulatory citations for things like not having a permit posted under glass when it's in someone's drawer, instead of being posted under the glass, right? So those are more ministerial. I'm kind of wondering, what are the other typical regulatory citations that you think you see that listeners should know about that are that very bottom level?
Well, permits is a big one. Basically, think of it this way. To me, regulatory means, in general, any type of just pure paperwork. Either you have the document or you don't. And we'll get that a little bit separate and apart from IAPP paperwork violations. But postings, permits, those sorts of things are regulatory. Reporting, 300 log violations, right. Those are regulatory because it's a paperwork violation where either you have it or you don't. It was posted or it wasn't. You obtained the permit to build your structure over 36 feet or you didn't. You got an elevator, you either have the permit or you don't. So that's regulatory.
And then the next category up is general, which we see a lot of citations issued around the IIPP, around documentation, training. Those citations, I see the penalties mostly running in the $300 to $900 range. Is that about right for you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And probably around the same. Usually, believe it or not, regulatory usually hit just a little bit heavier. So when a regulatory for the same client, same size, same factors, like $900 for regulatory in that context, maybe $600 for the general. And there's a lot of people, we'll get into those factors here in a little bit.
And a general is not going to hurt you as much on your safety record. It's not going to impact employers as much, although it's always a risk for a future repeat citation or a future willful. So one thing Kevin and I try to be aware of when we're looking at classification and how we will assert that in a case and how we will litigate classification, a lot of times we're looking at the business impact for the future, frankly, and for the business's ability to contract and trying to get the serious or serious accident related citation reduced to a general, which is much more palatable. What do you think about that?
No, I agree with that completely. And just for those of you that do a lot of federal OSHA work and maybe not so much Cal OSHA work that's listening to this, regulatory in general is the same context as other than serious. So we hear
that.
We hear a lot of folks that do a lot of federal work or in other states, they don't have general regulatory. They have what's identified other than serious, or if you go on the website for this demonstration. So just put that in context for folks. So, and then, most of our litigation is around the classification issue of serious, which you're about to launch into before I digressed into other than serious.
That's so, okay, Kevin. Yeah. So with a serious classification, and you're going to see it with a big S on the penalty calculation sheet and abbreviated with just the letter S, the standard for a serious violation is that there's a realistic possibility of death or serious physical harm that could result from the hazard. This changed a few. Did it change? What year did it change? Like 2010 or 11?
I should know. I was on the negotiating committee for the AB 2774 that a lot of people refer to it. And I'm going to add one more word to your definition: is actual hazard.
Yes.
Before, and that's a very important distinguishing factor in the classification.
Actual hazard, right?
Yeah, because instead of just looking at it generally like they used to, now they say it's got to be based on the actual hazard. But
and I think it's important for employers to understand that around this serious classification, we're dealing with a rebuttable presumption of the classification. And I see a lot of inspectors that will get on the stand with regard to classification or with regard to their investigation, and they'll talk about, well, in my experience, when I've seen people fall from 7 feet, there have been fatalities, that they'll go through these scenarios of what they've seen. And sometimes it can actually get a little theoretical, right? Or especially if it's about aerosol transmissible disease or exposures, or when you're cited for a serious, but no employee was hurt at all,
right?
And so that's an area where putting forward your defenses and disputing the classification can have some interesting nuances And you really need to understand the inspector's testimony and findings, like when you look at the file and you see their narrative, right, for mm-hmm. their analysis of the evidence. Sometimes you'll just see that they've classified it as serious based on hearsay.
Right.
That Jimmy the laborer says that sometimes there's not a guard on the machine. And that's all it'll say. And you're thinking, wow, okay, can't wait to get you on the stand for that one, right?
Right.
I'd say that when we do the appeals, we dispute classification, but not all the time, right?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that for a second. So here, and what Karen's alluding to is we were talking before the podcast about this, is that I see this all the time where I will get called into a case that the client has appealed themselves. Mm-hmm. And then they'll say, hey, this is getting a little sticky, or I got a hearing coming up, and I don't know that I want to try the case or what have you. And the first thing I ask for, okay, let's see what you filed, right? Yeah. And so they've appealed the general, and they've appealed the serious citation. And on the general, they've appealed classification, reasonableness of penalty, and safety order wasn't violated. These are all check boxes on the appeal form. Well, that sounds great, but think about it. The only place you can go from a general is up. It can only get worse. So once you appeal classification, you are basically saying, you know, Your Honor, I don't think a general is the right classification. So where do you go from there? To serious. So it opens the door for them to conform to proof and puts at issue the classification. If you don't take anything else away from this podcast, whatever you do when you appeal generals, do not appeal classification or reasonableness of penalty, because those two things can put your classification at issue and open the door for it to change later. If you don't, then you're stuck with
You can go is a general. Mm-hmm. And I have had Cal OSHA counsel, and I won't say whether it's in Oakland or LA, when I've taken over an appeal, try to do that and try to put on proof that it should have been a serious. And then I pull out those appeal forms and I say, Your Honor, classification is not at issue. And I've won on that. And I think you have too, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, here's another little trick and nuance too. You may have a willful general. Now, we're getting ready to talk about this a little bit, but willful is not a classification. It's a characterization of a classification. And I know that's a little nuanced, but you do need to appeal the characterization. So that would become in a separate, is that the characterization of the general is incorrect or, mm-hmm. or whatever your defenses are going to be. But it's okay, because that goes to characterization. Accident related is a characterization. Repeat is a characterization. Yes. Willful is a characterization. And people interchange classification, characterization all the time, and it's incorrect.
Another aspect of citations to be mindful of, and that we litigate and that we try to get lowered to a general typically, is the serious accident related, which mm-hmm. you just mentioned. And so in order for a citation to be held as a accident related, there has to be a showing by the division, meaning it's their burden, mm-hmm. of a causal nexus between the violation and the serious injury. So that means they have to tie the actual hazard mm-hmm. into the injury. And this can sometimes be a little difficult for them, I think, because they'll cite something, a particular violation, but that may not be what caused the injury.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting. So here's my two favorites. I got to launch into two favorites here.
It's okay.
So one is failure to train as accident related. And then the interview says, well, okay, we have no training documents on this guy, right? Or gal. And so we don't have any proof there's training, but they've been doing it for 20 years and they're a journeyman. And in the interview, everyone said, this is how we're supposed to do it. But for some reason, you know, Tom didn't do it this way. And they said serious accident related. Well, so the argument there is, how is the lack of training, whenever they've said they knew how to do it correctly and safely, a cause to it? We may have a violation for not training because we didn't train, but he knew or she knew. And so that's a little nuanced thing. The other one is where they cite four serious accident related for four different right. regulations. And so, hey, you got to pick one. They can't all have been a substantial nexus to, because right. if you take substantial, it's 51%. So you can't have 200% of a nexus with something. So that's another issue that always comes up. And a lot of times what they're saying is, we don't know for sure which one, but we know one of them did.
So and we're going to throw it up all against the wall. We're going to see what sticks and see what we can get the employer to agree to. And I think that I've seen, when you talk about the training violations, I've seen training violations that should have been generals that were issued as serious or serious accident related. And I'm like you, I attack it in that same way.
Yeah.
Because really, it's just so hard to show that a training violation, because some guy, you know, didn't attend the quarterly safety meeting about some particular thing, that was what ended up causing the accident or the amputation.
Right, right. And on the flip side, too, you could have multiple serious for one that's not related to the accident, but surrounding the accident, which may be true, maybe not. And then the other thing I want to talk about a little bit, Karen, is we see this all the time, or I have clients that was like, well, a general versus a serious is like, well, wait a minute, this, I fixed it as soon as they were there and I got a general. And I'm like, well, that doesn't mean that they aren't going to issue a citation if you fix what was in front of them that just admitted there was something wrong.
On your list of 24 that's in front of you, I fixed it, isn't an affirmative defense, Kevin.
Or I'm a good guy. Yeah. That's not one. The other thing is for folks to understand too the definition of what a general is. A general is a violative condition that could be classified as serious, but where the employer, through due diligence, did not know or could not have known of the violative condition. And so let's take one that is probably, take one that's maybe obvious serious. There's no guardrail on the 70th floor of a building. Mm-hmm. Okay, that, no question, that's probably serious because if someone walks off the edge of that, and there's people working within 6 feet of it, mm-hmm. to, you know, for the safety professionals, they're going to say, well, was there exposure or not? But if you have a supervisor inspects that floor every 2 hours, and this happened to be, and it was up on his checklist when he checked it this morning, and not now, and your due diligence is evident, so that's a general. It doesn't mean there's not a violation, it's still a violation. Yes. And so that misnomer, a general, is kind of like a strict liability, mm-hmm. if it, in a way, claims. I didn't mean to go off on that tangent, Karen.
That's okay. Well, as we finish up this podcast, sometimes we really take a swing at the penalty calculation, and other times we don't really care, right? The $395, it's not a big deal to most employers. But I rarely stipulate to penalty calculation at hearing at the outset. I know that sounds tough or like I'm making people jump through hoops, but I like to see how the case goes. And you can show good faith, right? Or rarely do you dispute the number of employees you have. Usually you've settled on that. You can stipulate to that.
Yeah.
But don't forget that the penalty calculation, and you'll see that sheet in the discovery with all the different factors calculated and your abatement credit, except for in a serious accident related. Isn't that right? Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll see all your different credits and the numbers. And I've seen penalty calculation sheets that had bad math. Have you?
Oh, yeah. I just had one the other day that they claimed was a willful, but they forgot to check the willful box on the clear calculation sheet, and they put it on the wrong section area, and they didn't, so it was all messed up. So that was just last week.
Right. So it's a bunch of math with all these different factors, so including gravity, size, good faith, and history, and an abatement credit. We do end up trying to see if we can have some room, especially on those big $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 penalties.
Let me ask you one more question. I know we're about out of time, Karen, but I hear this all the time. It's serious accident related. Hey, well, can you go in there and you just, I don't mind taking the serious accident. I just want a reduction in penalty. What do you have to do with that?
Well, the problem with the serious accident related is you're not going to get any abatement credit, right? And so the district manager or the Cal OSHA council is going to just say, hey, my hands are tied. If we leave it as charged on the AVD and in the citation. So what you've got to do is either get it down to a serious to get your abatement credit and to get some penalty calculations that can take good faith into account. And other than that, you really are stuck with the factors and the calculations. Now, one nuance, and Kevin and I do this sometimes when we settle cases, you can stipulate to a penalty that's different than the penalty calculation. So I've stipulated before to a $5,000 general, like it's a whole part of a deal, right? We got rid of a couple of serious. We did this, we did that. We moved some shell games around. And at the end of the day, we say to the district manager, look, you know, you've knocked a ton of money off this. We've gotten rid of the serious. We're willing to pay $5,000 for this general. Do you find that happens too?
Yes, but I will tell you this is in case folks listening will say, well, I talked to them about stipulating that. So, no. And so there is a divergence within the division of, and I think they say they claim it's regulation. I say it's policy where they say, no, you have to calculate the penalty. So the labor code says calculate. I go, well, that's if you're trying the case. If you're settling it, that's right. What settlement is coming up with something, you know, because what is the purpose of penalties is to defer the activity in the future. Yeah. And so if you come up with an amount that's not equal to the statute, you stipulate. But that used to happen a lot more, and it was very fair for both sides. They got a little pound of flesh. We saved a couple pounds.
Yeah.
But now we're running up against this roadblock of the folks within the division that someone in there has decided that they shouldn't do that. And so you may get that just from the
right,
podcast. You may
enough,
get that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I still do that. And I know you still do that, or we still accomplish that with things.
We still accomplish it. Yeah. We find another way to skin the cat.
Yeah. It's interesting. They'll stipulate to a greater penalty, but they won't to a lesser penalty.
I know, right?
How does that rule work? I think that pretty much covers series two. Thanks for listening to Karen and Kevin. I'm Kevin. Look for our blog articles on ogletree.com. We have recorded webinars related to COVID-19 in the Ogletree COVID-19 resource webpage. We have quite a few other workplace safety podcasts, including a primer on Cal OSHA, accidents and fatalities, Cal OSHA hearings, health care facility inspections, and many, many more COVID and non-COVID podcasts and information there. Take care and stay safe, everyone. Thanks for listening to us today.
Stay safe, everybody. Bye now.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.